And this presentation is very specific to state-level chronic disease programs and how we included people with disabilities in Kansas. And I'd like to acknowledge the principal investigator, Paula Clayton, and our two incredible co-directors, Lori Haskett and Dr. Glenn White. And I have no financial relationships to disclose. I'd also like to acknowledge the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention for funding the Kansas Disability and Health Program and the Kansas Chronic Disease Managers. Most importantly, I'd like to acknowledge the Kansas Disability Advisory Board members who are truly the core of our program. So the data used throughout this presentation all come from the Kansas Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System in the year of 2009. People with disabilities make up a large proportion of our population. In Kansas, 21% of people 18 and older had a disability. People with disabilities also experience larger health disparities than people without disabilities. In Kansas, those living with a disability have a 3 times higher prevalence rate of diabetes, and similarly have a 5 times higher rate of having had a heart attack, and a 2.5 times higher prevalence of cancer. People with disabilities also frequently report greater unmet healthcare needs than people without disabilities. And so in Kansas, we really wanted to figure out why this was and what the restrictions were and if indeed there were any. And we asked people who screened yes on disability, on the BRFIS, if they were restricted and what those restrictions were. And this is really just a snapshot of what we have. But we found out that 1 of every 10 was restricted from receiving health care, and 14% of those say that it was due to physical access barriers, and 27% of those who said that they were restricted said they had been treated unfairly due to their disability, which is very interesting because it's never asked on the BRFIS if they self-identify as having a disability. So the beginning of conscientiously integrating people with disabilities into the Bureau of Health Promotion programs all started with requests for proposal from the Centers for Disease Control. And the CDC funds 16 state disability and health programs throughout the nation, and we're supported to promote the health of people with disabilities and also to prevent secondary conditions. The core of our program is really breaking out of our silo and collaborating closely with other programs within the Bureau of Health Promotion. So the Bureau of Health Promotion at the Kansas Department of Health and Environment houses chronic disease, injury prevention, and disability programs. And the physical structure of the Bureau is very conducive to collaborating because basically we're all cubicle mates, so I get to see the people I work with on a daily basis. Recently, I got to talk at a different national conference about what Kansas is doing to include people with disabilities into our health promotion programs. And a gentleman in the audience said, well, how do you get the chronic disease managers to listen to you? He was very frustrated because he was trying to talk to his state's chronic disease managers, but to no avail because he believed they wouldn't talk with him because he worked in a different state agency. And so I have to be honest, without funding from the CDC to fund my position or a position like mine, and without this position's physical proximity to the people we collaborate with, I don't think Kansas would be as successful in including people with disabilities into these other health promotion programs. See, one of my duties is acting as a liaison between the public health and the disability communities. I use my daily interactions to kind of bridge the cultural and communication differences that these communities have. So I really try to prime the public health environment to learn about disability etiquette, and likewise, just try to figure out how these programs operate so I can convey that to the disability community. Because from an outside perspective, a lot of these programs are, well, they have a shroud of mystery around them. And so it's, even from an inside perspective, it's still interesting to try to figure out how they operate. So, As you can see on this organization chart, the Disability, Cancer, Cardiovascular, and Diabetes Action Councils all have advisory boards. And within each of these advisory boards, there are several different work groups. And so public health programs at the state level often use a participatory process to really to set public health agendas using these advisory boards. And so to eliminate health disparities in a culturally competent manner, we focused on putting a person with a disability or from a disability organization onto each of these work groups on each of these different advisory boards. And so people with disabilities are literally at the table to kind of guide the process of addressing disability-related health disparities. And we really recruited from Centers for Independent Living, which are non-residential disability resource centers or other disability organizations. And this picture is an action shot, or as much of an action shot as you'll ever see at one of these face-to-face meetings. And so what the people with disabilities have done on the different advisory boards is they've increased the awareness of disability-related health disparities. They've taught how to make meetings accessible, and they've taught that there is a thriving disability community in Kansas. So one thing that most state programs have are what's called action or state plans, and it's action plans, what they want to do over the next 5 years. And so this is just one example, is to develop user-friendly, culturally appropriate public awareness materials. And we try to keep them held accountable to this promise that they've made. And then they have an education program targeting people with prediabetes and undiagnosed diabetes. And it includes messages that people with disabilities can and should be physically active using the National Center on Physical Activity and Disability as a resource. And also, they've taught about how to make meetings accessible. Prior to inviting people with disabilities, they would not serve diabetes-friendly meals where lots of people with diabetes would be attending. And another result is that the disability community is growing an understanding of public health. So there's a lot of different rural disability communities in Kansas now that are learning, you know, what are the risk factors for diabetes, for example. So our advisory board members met up with the chronic disease program managers to look at our shared outcomes. And so this is just a very brief snapshot of what we believe we have in common. We really merge all of our different logic models together, and it's huge. It takes up a whole wall, and we color-coded it to show visually how our programs could and should share our limited resources. And so, you know, we all care about improving the quality and years of life and reducing health disparities, and we're really helping our partners reach their grant goals and objectives by addressing disability-related health disparities. And they kind of get it. They have buy-in when they see this. And so together we have a very strong vision for how we want to increase the health of Kansans with disabilities. And at the top of the list is living well with a disability. And if you don't know very much about this, it's an evidence-based program that has been shown to reduce secondary conditions for people with physical disabilities. And it was created out of the University of Montana. It's excellent. And another thing that all of our programs commit to doing now is increasing healthcare provider, disability cultural competency. And I am very excited about a program that is the Kansas Disability and Health Program, created for an online, it's nationwide, continuing education for nurses, doctors, and other healthcare providers that they can, it's really removing barriers for the doctors to say, well, you know, it's practically free. It's going to be right at their offices so they can learn about disability, cultural competency, just right there. And we worked with the World Institute on Disability, Dr. Marcia Saxon, and using her video, and also with Dr. Susan Haverkamp and Dr. Amanda Rieker's research on the differences of quality of care disparities. And this is our evaluation that Dr. Glenn White and our disability advisory board members ask for advisory board members to fill out every month after their phone calls or a face-to-face meeting. And it's just really getting down to the end, how does your input affect the health of Kansans with disabilities? So the independent living movement, which is a civil rights movement for people with disabilities, has a saying, nothing about us without us. History reveals some well-intentioned programs and policies that affect people with disabilities were actually devastating. And so by purposefully including people with disabilities to be at the public health table, our goal is that We want to avoid some of history's mistakes of creating interventions for disparate populations without their input. And we also know that people with disabilities want to do more than just be on public health agenda. They want to make a difference. And one of the things that they really believe in now after meeting all together is evidence-based programs and practices. And so I've learned a lot here at APHA from what my colleagues in the disability section have taught me. And so I look forward to sharing some of those programs when I go back to Kansas. And lastly, addressing disability-related health disparities is a social justice issue. And I believe very strongly that including people with disabilities to literally be at the public health table is one way, one effective way, of reducing health disparities for this population. Thank you.